Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, is hosted by Annex Wealth Management, a fee-only registered investment advisor. Important information about the qualifications and business practices of Annex is available at annexwealth.com. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk. Please consult with a qualified fiduciary advisor about your specific situation. Annex Wealth Management is a local fee-only fiduciary providing investment, retirement, tax, and estate planning. Know the difference. Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Inflation just hit its highest level in over 3 years, and also the IPO buzz keeps building. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. Great to have you here. I'm Joe Kraus, Chief Economic Strategist. Dr. Brian Jacobson is here as always. Hey, Brian.
Hey, it's great to be here.
And CEO of Annex, Dave Spano.
Thanks, Joe. You know, you try to put your brain around a trillion. Just think about how large that is. So a billion is 1,000 millions. So a trillion is 1,000 billions.
Yeah.
The man has 1,000 billions.
I know. Well,
Elon Musk.
It's just incredible if you think about the top billionaires, right? You see those lists, I think Forbes and a number of others that always said, you know, the top 100. Well, it would be, you know, if each one of them had a billion, you'd have to multiply that by 10, the number of people. And when I think about the amount of time trying to conceptualize this, is it would be like every second for more than 31,000 years. That's how many trillions of seconds.
Yeah, this year back to the Ice Age.
It is. Yeah, it really is. It's pretty incredible. And, you know, good for him as far as the value that he's created and the way that people are excited about it. And it was kind of exciting to watch the trading.
It really was. On Friday morning, I watched his presser right at the bell at 8:30 Central Time. And it was straight out of a movie. I mean, with the backdrop, and it was produced, and the people were behind him. I mean, literally, if you were going to shoot a movie, that's what it would look like.
If you have $1 trillion, I mean, you can afford to do that, I suppose.
Exactly. All right, so we're talking about, of course, the new IPO in SpaceX, and it was a topic of discussion by lots of people, some of our clients, but certainly people that were stopping us along the way. And so let's explain a little bit about an initial public offering. I know it's a bit of a primer course, but we'll speed it up.
Sure. Yeah, we'll try to do this as quickly and succinctly as possible. When it's initially traded, that's just the idea, is that's when it's publicly traded. This is a company that is more than 25 years old, but it was privately held. Obviously, lots of different shareholders, the employees were getting stock compensation, but they don't necessarily have a real easy outlet in terms of if they wanted to have a liquidity event, if they wanted to sell off some of those shares. And so that's where going public can be very valuable for those existing shareholders. And there's other reasons as well. With SpaceX, they wanted to raise about $75 billion to help fund some other investments that they wanted to make, because this wasn't to give employees liquidity. The employees aren't selling, at least as far as I know. This was to actually raise new capital. So instead of taking out a loan from a bank or issuing bonds, they can issue stock. So that's the IPO.
So that's the initial. And then it moves to the secondary market, which we all see, which is not the institution. So I want to explain how the institutions, whatever, the big banks and brokerage firms, how they got theirs first.
That's right. So they get it first as far as that allocation, which brings a little bit more certainty to the company that's trying to raise money. Because if it's just traded in the public market, you don't know as far as what the supply and demand will be. So they have these contracts. They have the ones who are, they sometimes call them the book runners, where they're trying to get the institutional investors, and in this case, a bunch of retail investors as well, where they get an allocation at a certain price. So that's the money that the company gets. Well, now it then gets traded on the exchange. That's where it took a little bit of time for them to figure out what is the opening price going to be, because you had the initial price, the $135.
And that was set, frankly, by Elon Musk.
It was.
And not the regular way, which is there's a roadshow and the bankers come up with a price.
Yep.
So now it starts to trade, and then it's a supply and demand issue.
Exactly.
And so it didn't trade at $135. It traded at 150 and then up to 1665, and then you saw all of the volume.
Exactly. And that's where other people who they want to get in, they weren't part of the initial allocation, then they can actually start buying. You get this, sometimes it's called an order imbalance. And so they raise the price, they lower the price until it clears. And now it's just about, well, let's see, supply, demand for people who want to buy, people who want to sell. Interestingly, if you were an individual investor as part of that allocation, so you got it, let's say you knew the price Thursday night, you knew the dollar amount that you were, or the total amount by Friday morning. If you try to just flip those shares, those brokers, they don't like that, right? Mm-hmm. They're looking for people to hold on to this. And so really, if you did participate, you got that allocation, the initial part, check what the requirements are as far as your holding period. Otherwise, you might get blacklisted from participating in future IPOs.
And there's more IPOs to come. It's, you know, we've got Anthropic and other names coming down the road. So let's now move to, is it a good investment or not? You know, we generally look at investments and it's documented and it's a repeatable process based upon the financial data.
Yeah.
You know, how much does a company earn? You know, what's the market price? How do you value it? So it's very hard to do that because it's an initial pricing.
Yeah.
We don't have any of that stuff.
That's right. Yeah. Until they file the information, it's not public. It's private information. Now, people there at the company, they had it, but they don't disclose it. And that's one of the reasons why some companies don't want to go public is because they don't want to disclose all of the financials.
Yep.
OpenAI kind of hinted at that a little bit in terms of, you know, they're not sure when they're going to actually go public. There's maybe some things that they want to do that's easier when they're private instead of public. But yeah, our process, if we want to understand the fundamentals, that means understanding all of the financial statements, right? The statement of income, you have the balance sheet, you have the statement of cash flows. We want to see that. And not just one simple one quarter's worth of information. We want to try to evaluate trends. And so as a result, you know, our process is more aligned with more seasoned companies that have been trading for at least a little bit.
Right. And so we can look at it. But I saw a report on Friday morning before it opened that the total addressable market for this is somewhere in the neighborhood of more than $20 trillion. So there's room to look. We will look at it.
Yep.
We'll see if it fits in your portfolio, so on. But, you know, Joe started the show with talking about inflation as well. We got a number that was hotter than we liked, and so we have to talk about it.
Yeah, it was hot on the surface, but somewhat cooler underneath. It was almost like if you microwave something, you know,
and it wasn't in there long enough.
It wasn't in there quite
it was
long
like
enough,
a hot
right?
Pocket.
Which hopefully, right? Yeah, you take the hot pocket.
You burn it on the outside and it's cold on the inside.
That's right. It's like it's still frozen in the middle. And I think that's a good thing because now that, you know, let's see what happens with the situation in Iran. Plenty of headlines, plenty of rumors. And hopefully this upcoming week, we'll see some, you know, finalization of a deal or no deal. But
and the reason why you say that is because a lot of that inflation number was energy related.
Exactly.
Got
yeah. The bulk of it in terms of the headline number, 4.2% year-over-year inflation for consumer price index. Most of that, some estimates are about 60% of that inflation is from energy. And if we then look at core, so excluding food and energy, and it's not because we don't think people don't drive and they don't eat, it's just those are very volatile numbers.
Right.
That core part, 2.9%, no, it's not the 2% inflation the Fed is targeting, but it's closer to it than that 4.2% number.
Yep.
And if all of a sudden we see gasoline prices move lower, like just think about back in January, nationwide average price of gasoline was somewhere around like $2.75 a gallon. And it got up to like $4.50. Now we're down closer to $4.10.
Yeah.
So if we trace
crude,
that.
So crude is back under $90,
yes.
Right? So folks, that really is something we're going to continue to watch. And in the markets, especially the fixed income markets, are looking for lower inflation down the road. So we can help.
And are you where you thought you would be with your portfolio? Annex follows the market trends on a daily basis and can help guide you through the numbers with an experienced team that is all in-house. If you're not where you thought you'd be with your portfolio, click the Get Started button at annexwealth.com. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Custom-tailored investment and retirement planning from a fee-only fiduciary. Know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Today, we're diving into a small but fascinating detail hidden inside nearly every married couple's tax return. Who gets listed as the taxpayer and who is labeled the spouse? There is a difference. While the choice doesn't affect the amount of tax a couple pays, it does reveal a surprising amount about cultural expectations, financial dynamics, responsibilities, and how those patterns are slowly evolving. So we're taking a closer look at what the data shows, why it matters, and how it reflects the changing role of women in financial decision making. So two financial planning specialists at Annex join us, Arabella Perrins. Hi.
Hi, Joe.
And financial planning specialist Rebecca Posig.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having us.
Rebecca, let's start with you. Why does a joint tax return list one person as taxpayer accepting that responsibility and the other as the spouse?
Yeah, it's primarily for identification purposes. When we're looking at tax forms or statements in the tax return, oftentimes they'll have a T for taxpayer and S for spouse listed next to the income. It sort of ties the income to the person. So it can be very helpful for tax professionals and taxpayers, too, to see that designation on the return. So it's mostly just to keep things consistent and identifiable on the tax return.
And because it's only for identification purposes, it has no impact on the amount of tax liability that you owe. It really isn't changing numbers or the math here. It's just about identifying who is T and who is S on your tax forms. Now, Rebecca, what is your guess as to the percentage of married couples who listed the wife as the primary taxpayer in 2020?
Maybe 5-10%?
So a 2020 study revealed that only 12% of couples listed the wife first as the taxpayer. However, this is an increase from the prior study that was done in 1996, when it was only 3% of wives as taxpayers. So we have seen that number increase over the years.
That's a really low number.
When I first heard the statistic, it made me want to become taxpayer when I get married. I felt strongly about it. But after asking around, women we've asked generally don't know whether they're the taxpayer or spouse, and they don't really care either way. I think it just generally reflects the mindset about taxes. People don't want to think about it too much.
Yeah, I definitely fall into that camp. I wouldn't say it's really a priority for me. I'm just fine being the taxpayer or the spouse.
And I think there's a generational difference at play here as well. Younger wives are more likely to be listed as taxpayer, but this is still a very small difference from other generations. It just means the younger you are, the more likely you are to have the wife listed as taxpayer.
And I think with the younger generation, too, oftentimes it's thought of more as whoever is the higher wage earner, whoever's earning more of the household's income is just going to be listed first.
Yeah, and that was a correlation that was noted in that aforementioned study here. Now, when they asked about this topic, professional tax preparers said that it's often easier to just have a standard method with T for taxpayer being the man and S for spouse being the woman when preparing returns. Now, Rebecca and I both here are tax preparers at Annex, and I understand where they're coming from here. When the overwhelming majority of returns I prepare follow the convention of having the man first, it can be hard to break that habit. It's just how you identify things, right? However, as a woman who wants to be taxpayer, and I'm on a tax team comprised of mostly women, I really try to avoid assuming that the taxpayer is always a man. In fact, I was preparing a return today in which woman was taxpayer.
That's a great example, Arabella. Here at Annex, our typical assumption is the person who is most engaged with us will be the taxpayer. Whoever is dropping off the documents, answering our emails, or scheduling meetings, we're probably going to have them listed first unless we're told otherwise.
And I think the increasing number of wives filing as taxpayer reflects the growing influence of women generally within the financial sphere. The amount of wealth controlled by women is growing every year. We've seen that in a number of studies. And more women are investing in the stock market. And I personally want to see all of these numbers grow even more.
So if you are considering making a switch to being the taxpayer rather than the spouse, just know that the IRS doesn't have any rules saying you can't switch. They do advise you to be consistent with your selection. Just want to avoid any confusion, don't want to leave a lot of room for error, so just try to avoid switching back and forth a lot.
So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, I want to be taxpayer, then that is within the realm of possibility.
With power comes great responsibility, right? You're the taxpayer, you got to be responsible then, right?
Well, I mean, both spouses are on the hook. They're both liable for, you know, any number of things. It's really just for identification. So it's not like they're going to come knocking on taxpayer's door rather than spouse's door. You know, hopefully since you're married filing jointly, you're both on that same door, right?
Just who wants the paperwork and all the admin duties?
Right. How you want the letters to be addressed to you, whether you're taxpayer or your spouse. They do address their letters that way.
Thank you both so much. Rebecca Posey, big Arabella parents. Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Click Get Started at AnnexWealth.com.
Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, more in-person events coming up. The Women in Wealth Saving the Family Cottage event. Navigating difficult family conversations when vacation property is involved. Click events at annexwealth.com. And an instant insight. Fed Day is coming up soon. The Fed and the markets with Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economic Strategist at Annex Wealth Management. How to stay informed but trust your financial plan. What's important when we're seeing the words breaking news? That is Wednesday, 3 p.m. Central, 4 p.m. Eastern. Set your reminder. Click events at annexwealth.com. And Dr. Brian Jacobson, our Chief Economic Strategist, is here right now. And what are we expecting with a new Fed chair on Fed Day on the 17th?
Yeah, it's really interesting. We actually don't know what to expect. How is he going to actually run the meeting? We don't get to see the meeting itself, but in terms of you get the statement that comes out, then there's the press conference. So the press conference is the part I think that's going to be most interesting because he has a very different philosophy of communication than, say, Chair Powell did, than Chair Yellen and Chair Bernanke, basically the three predecessors. He kind of wants to dial back some of what's called the forward guidance. He doesn't want to paint the Fed into a corner or almost like talk themselves into doing something that they otherwise wouldn't do based on the data. There's also been some rumors. So they're going to be having the summary of economic projections. That's the famous dot plot, or as Dave likes to call it, the dart plot, right? Their guesses about what's going to happen with growth, the labor market, inflation, and then how policy, monetary policy, should respond to it, which is, I think, useful for kind of thinking about how are they disposed, right? Are they more hawkish? Are they more dovish? But he might withhold his dot. He might be like, you know what? I don't really believe that this is useful because so much can happen that can make those guesses wrong, where he's like, maybe it's a bit disingenuous to put down these dots. It conveys maybe a little bit too much confidence in that outlook. So I think that's really going to be the interesting thing. The statement itself, when it comes out, probably say, you know what, we don't know what's going to happen with inflation, and so we'll just roll with the punches like everybody else. But then that summary of economic projections plus the press conference, I think that's what investors are really going to focus in on, and that's what could move markets.
So click events at annexwealth.com. That is instant insight, the Fed and the markets. Perfect timing, Wednesday, June 17th. What time is the meeting on the 17th?
So on the 17th, the policy statement comes out at 2 o'clock Eastern time, 1 o'clock Central time, and then the press conference comes out 30 minutes later.
All right, so right after that, we have that webinar for you at annexwealth.com. Financial planning at every level, Annex Comprehensive Wealth, Annex Private Client, and Annex Ignite, 9 total locations, and there's one near you around the Milwaukee area. Another quick reminder, Women in Wealth, Saving the Family Cottage. Since it's up north season, keep the peace, avoid family conflict by learning smart planning when multiple heirs share a vacation home. June 18th, this coming week, 6 to 8 p.m., right here at our Annex Wealth Management headquarters in Brookfield. Glad you're with us this morning. Time for news. Let's go to the WTMJ Breaking News Center.
Planning and investing insight from a fee-only fiduciary. You're listening to Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, good morning. Glad you're back. 20 years of Money Talk and 250 years of the American economy. Our chief economic strategist and chief historian strategist talking about the economy. We've had fun talking about this over the past week or so. Last time we looked at the history of the national debt and how the U.S. developed credibility in paying its bills on time and in full, but we skipped over a lot of other things. Interesting things like the Louisiana Purchase, the War of 1812, and other things to focus on one or two major topics. This time, no different. We are looking at the 1836 to 1865 time period. It was a fascinating time where the dollar in your pocket might be worth a fraction of that, depending on where you tried to use it.
That's right. Yeah, it was a really interesting time. So what we're trying to do is just kind of tease out from history what are the things that have a really lasting effect and that still affect us today. I would highlight how wildcat banking and greenbacks being the two most important ones bonds from that time period. It used to be that the U.S. dollar was basically backed by gold or silver. It was a bimetallic standard is what it's called. Now, that didn't always happen. We have transitioned away from that, of course, and it really began back in 1865 around with the Civil War. But prior to that, if you were, let's say, going to a bank in Ohio, they issue you a certificate. They claim that they held gold, and so you could redeem that certificate for their gold, right? Well, you wouldn't really know whether or not that bank held that gold. So that's where those certificates, banks issuing their own currencies, they could trade at wildly different values depending upon where it was. And in fact, there were what were called wildcat banks, where sometimes people who were a bit entrepreneurial, they'd start up a quote-unquote bank, issue these notes, and who knows what they were actually worth. When we got towards the Civil War, obviously the Union needed to fund the Civil War, so they started issuing what were called greenbacks. It was the first time that the U.S. government issued currency that wasn't backed by gold. And its value at certain times was only like 35 cents on relative to the gold dollar. But what ended up happening was the government said, you know what? We're going to require people to use these. So if you look at a dollar today, it'll say something like, this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private. That legal tender clause, that's really important because it's like, hey, if we're going to tax you, which we have the power to do, you need to pay it with this. So that's what gives it value. So really fascinating, the experiment that we had going on back then between gold, silver backed, banks issue their own currency and then moving towards a more uniform national currency.
And one of the things real quickly, what happened during the Panic of 1857? Because that was a big deal during that time too.
It was. So always had some financial panics. Panic of 1857, railroads were basically the AI of their time. Massive infrastructure development. In fact, like 6% of gross domestic product. So even bigger than AI today. Not all of them were profitable. And so caused a bit of a panic. Plus panic could spread almost like wildfire because of the telegraph. Prior to the telegraph, right, things would have to travel by carrier pigeon sometimes. Yeah, when it was traveling at the speed of light at that point.
How far we've come. More of our economic history next week on Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. Uncertainty with geopolitical situations, inflations, taxes, we're here. Click the Get Started button at annexwealth.com. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Money Talk is straight talk from a local fee-only fiduciary. It's time to know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. You might have seen this in recent headlines, been in a few different articles. More Americans are dipping into their retirement accounts as financial pressures continue to rise. Even though balances have grown in recent years, workers are increasingly turning to hardship withdrawals and loans to cover immediate expenses. This is a trend that raises some questions about financial resilience and maybe some long-term impact on retirement security. So that's a good thing that Tom Parks is here. He's the director of retirement plan services at Annex Wealth Management. Thanks for being on the show, Tom.
Thank you for having me, Joe.
So what do you think is driving this surge in 401k withdrawals right now? Because this is something you and your team have been tracking.
Right. This is changing all the time. So I think one of the things is there are more people who have 401ks now than ever. So the fact that there are more people who have a 401k means there are more people who can withdraw from 401k. So just simple math thing. But the other is the SECURE legislation and SECURE 2.0. Congress made it easier for people to access 401k money before retirement. That is also contributing to this increase, I think, in people accessing. So combination of factors here.
Yeah, so penalty-free, you take it out maybe because of something circumstantial, and then you're thinking, okay, well, now my circumstantial situation is over. I still have more money to withdraw, and maybe you get that number in front of you and get excited about
it. Well, there's social medias out there. People are giving all sorts of crazy advice on social media, but they'll say things, make factual statements about how now you have access to when you didn't before without getting into the details and the ramifications of stuff. So then I think people have it in their head that, oh, here's this new pile of money to which I have access that I didn't before. And once that idea gets in your head, we see what happens here.
So what kind of long-term damage can maybe a hardship withdrawal cause to retirement savings? Because we talked about the circumstantial situations, mm-hmm. but can you catch back up?
Right. You're asking hardship withdrawals. So there are legitimate hardships and reasons people need to access money. So I'm not giving people a hard time for being in those situations. Obviously, it would be better if you weren't in it. But the long-term effect on your retirement. The younger you are, the more it's going to affect you because you have taken money out of that long-term compounding game. The closer you get to retirement, the less, I would say, of a longer-term impact it will have just because now that money doesn't have as long to grow. I always tell people there are lots of really good places to save money. So 529 accounts are great for saving for college. You've got HSAs, awesome, for saving for health expenses. An emergency fund is a great place to save money for if you have an emergency. A 401k account, in my eyes, is to save for retirement. It has a very specific purpose. And what has happened is a combination of legislation and then just trends in our industry of 401k providers are adding emergency savings accounts and they're adding these other things. It's mission creep is kind of how I look at it. And people, when they look at their 401k, they don't just see a retirement vehicle anymore. They see a piggy bank. That trend is very troublesome to me. You know, as it pertains to the long-term impact, the younger you are, the more exponential that impact becomes over the long term. And younger people tend not to think of, I know I wasn't thinking about that when I was, you know.
401k, that's not fun.
I started in this industry when I was 25, and even then, I've been immersed in it for 25 years. And I'm not going to pretend that I was thinking that far ahead.
I thought, hey, I have all this time.
Right, exactly. That, I think, is really contributing to some of the stuff that we're talking about.
Also depends, with the hardship withdrawals, how much you're taking out.
Oh, for sure. So there are some things, that, you know, there's a $1,000, you know, every 3 years penalty free. So that's kind of different from the traditional hardship withdrawal. One of the things that we were looking at in one of the articles, they were talking about the reasons that people were taking out hardship withdrawals. Prevention of eviction or foreclosure was at the top of the list. That's kind of concerning. Medical expenses were another one. That one is not surprising. And again, if you incur a medical expense, you know, what are you going to do? That happens. And so if more and more people are taking out the money to prevent foreclosure or eviction, that's concerning because then that means this is really kind of a last resort. Once this money's gone now, what's to prevent that foreclosure from happening 18 months from now? Now this resource, the safety net, is no longer there for you.
Nice round number, $100,000 in front of my face, and I'm looking at my 401k account. What would be the penalty of taking out $20,000?
Sure. So there is a 10% early withdrawal penalty for most hardship withdrawals. And then you have to pay the income taxes on top of it. With most 401k distributions, there is a mandatory 20% withholding. That is not the case for hardship withdrawals. And so adding insult to injury, you take out the hardship withdrawal because you have a legitimate hardship. Then come tax time, you owe 10% on that money that you took out plus the income tax. And then presumably you're not in a great financial position or you wouldn't have taken out the hardship withdrawal in the first place. It's a really pernicious cycle that you can get into with this stuff.
So we're realizing it might not be a good idea, maybe in some cases for a quick fix, but what should people do instead of raiding their 401ks?
This is why we focus so much on our team on financial wellness education, trying to get people so that they don't find themselves in this position in the first place. Prevention is the best medicine for this. Once you find yourself in this situation, take the smallest hardship withdrawal as I can, you know, that kind of situation.
Director of Retirement Plan Services at Annex Wealth Management, Tom Parks, thanks for being on the show again.
Thank you.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Click the Get Started button at annexwealth.com.
Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Glad you found us. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. Today's show is also a podcast and ready for you. As soon as the show is over, you can download it wherever you get your podcasts. Another way to get our education is with the Axiom. That is our newsletter with our Week in Review video from this show in your email on Sunday morning, along with what we're watching for the week ahead. Just search Annex Axiom. Other podcasts, too, like The Wealthiest, Ideas, Strategies, and Decisions of the Wealthy in America, and the SWOT podcast, Strengths, Weaknesses, Opportunities, and Threats of the Current Market, with a new episode first thing Monday morning, and our new Women in Wealth podcast, featuring special guests helping to empower women through genuine conversations. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson is here, and CEO of Annex, Dave Spano.
Thanks, Joe. I have to ask you, we talked about IPOs earlier in the show, and people want to talk about rockets, but there's probably other things to talk about, no?
Well, we've had a lot of puns as far as SpaceX goes.
If it dips, don't panic. It's just a temporary orbit adjustment.
Uh-huh. Oh, boy.
That oh one boy. Didn't land?
Nope.
No. Oh, land. Oh, nice.
Hey, all right. I was ready with that one in case it didn't work.
It didn't work.
SpaceX going public. Sounds like the market is aiming for the stars and beyond earnings. These aren't mine.
Yeah,
these
sure, are mine. You AI'd that. So speaking of AI-inspired ideas with trying to raise money, you know, an awful lot of talk about rockets, but there are other brands as well.
Yeah, there are. So we did have Anthropic. They filed saying that they are going to be having an initial public offering. Not quite sure the exact timing of it. OpenAI, they're also the ones who brought you ChatGPT. They were, I guess, the kids these days would call that the OG. They were the originals with ChatGPT. My son will groan if he hears this.
You didn't even know what an OG was.
I had no idea. All That's right. absolutely correct. But so, you know, we do have a number of these AI-related companies that are getting the headlines. But I think it's also interesting that we've had a pickup in initial public offerings in general. Inspire Brands is another one that is planning on going public. They're the ones who own Dunkin', Arby's, Sonic, Buffalo Wild Wings. So it's not just a purely AI-driven market. It's not just a purely AI-driven initial public offering calendar. Plenty of companies are out there that are trying to raise capital. It's another thing also that we're seeing where existing companies are raising money. Those are called seasoned equity offerings or SEOs. And they're even raising more money. If you think about Alphabet, the ones who brought you Google, right? They're raising like $80 to $85 billion. You have Supermicro Computer, they're going to raise some money, Oracle. So it's not just new companies, existing companies are using equity in order to raise capital.
And so when you talk about seasoned offerings, you're certainly not talking about Buffalo Wild Wings or Sonic because...
That's right. Is it the dry rub or is it the wet?
All right. So let's talk about Kevin Warsh. You know, he really haven't been talking about it lately because there's been other things to talk about. But the interest on the debt continues to rise now past what we pay in defense budget and rising. Mm-hmm. And so this is something that the Fed chair is going to have to tackle.
It is. And if you think about the government's budget, the more that it spends on interest, the less it has to spend on other things, or it has to raise taxes. You've got to get at some point in terms of the revenues, the expenditures, and the debt issuance. Those all come into play. And if we can actually see inflation move lower, and it's not going to happen right away because the data that we get on the economy is lagged. But if we head that direction, maybe this does open up the door for an eventual rate cut. We'll have to wait and see because Kevin Warsh is getting a bit of a warm welcome from the economic data. The labor market is doing pretty well. The employment situation report that we got, we've had 3 months in a row, very solid job gains. Now, the inflation numbers were too hot to handle. But if the core is a little bit cooler, maybe that could make it where they can make the argument that they can start to cut. We'll have to wait to see what happens with oil.
If they start to cut, that brings down that rate. And the reason why I started with the interest cost on the U.S. is when you're over 14%, it really is a constraint. Mm-hmm. You could almost call it austerity. Mm-hmm. 14% is kind of the Mendoza number. And we saw it hit 19% of tax revenue. That's a number that is a post-World War II high. So that is a bit of a constraint. So lowering interest rate while you have a constraining event is something he's going to have to look at.
It is. What the Fed controls is the short end, those short-term interest rates, the federal funds rate. It's the market that's really dictating what those other interest rates are. And that's a function of the issuance that comes from the Treasury, but also competing now with issuance from corporations and households. And so when we look at actually the first quarter of this past year, the Federal Reserve, they create these things called the financial statements or the financial accounts of the United States. And they look at the government, corporations, and the households, and what are the assets, what are the liabilities. And when we look at what happened during the first quarter, households, we only saw between 2 and 3% annualized growth in the amount of debt. Corporations are the ones who are issuing a lot more. The government, the federal government, was issuing around 6.5% to 7% at an annualized pace. So they need to maybe throttle that back a little bit, but that's not a monetary policy issue. That's a fiscal policy issue. So be interested to see how Kevin Warsh works with maybe Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent about how to deal with the issuance from the federal government.
Now, we talked about Elon Musk becoming the world's first trillionaire, which of course is going to be a hot topic,
yeah,
especially when we talk about where people are in this country and there's the bifurcation of economies. That'll heat up, you know, next week for sure. But the one thing I do want to say is people are participating. It's not just Elon Musk. And the reason why I say that is because the Dow Jones and the S&P 500 continue to go up. And why is that happening? Because their earnings on the S&P 500 continues to accelerate. We saw it, you know, north of 25%. That is an astounding number.
It really is. Corporations are very adaptable. They've been able to roll with the punches and improve their profitability. And households are benefiting from it, as you say, from participation in the stock market. More and more people are invested in the stock market, perhaps through their 401k plan at work. And so even if they don't have their own individual brokerage account, but we're also seeing wage growth. A lot of people are talking about how wages aren't going anywhere. Well, that's not technically true. Some of the data that we just got this past week, consumer price index number was higher than expected. So real wage, inflation adjusted wages were basically flat.
So people hear this. So wages are going up, but inflation is going up. And so that gap between the two is what we're talking about. And that's something to understand.
It is, exactly. Because we've seen decent real wage growth over the last couple of years where the amount that you work to buy the goods and services that you want, you don't have to work quite as much. Or when you're working, you can buy more of it. So that's real wage gains. Now, what we hope is this short-term inflationary blip, if we do see gasoline and oil prices go lower, then we're back, I think, to the position where we're seeing decent real wage gains. So we'll have to see how the summer plays out, of course. And a lot does depend upon what happens over the next few months. So stay tuned.
Joe, I think you should start wearing that Elon Musk black leather jacket. You just look like a trillionaire. You could pull that off.
Well, I was talking to Brian about that. I mean, he looked pretty cool. And Brian's on TV more than I am. You could pull that look off.
Exactly. It looks warm. I'm not sure I would want to wear that during the summertime.
Yeah, it's not a summer look. Yeah. Well, earlier in the show, we really got into the details of the SpaceX IPO. So if you missed that, you could download the podcast right now. Wherever you get your podcast, just search Annex Money Talk. For Dave Spano and Dr. Brian Jacobson, I'm Joe Krause. Have a great week. Join us again next Saturday at 10 a.m. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Advice and opinions expressed during Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, are solely that of the hosts or guests of Annex Wealth Management and not WTMJ Radio or Good Karma Brands Milwaukee, LLC.